I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about Food First, a new local documentary that explores changing attitudes about food and where it comes from. We'll discuss both the film and this community's ongoing conversation about healthy and responsible food production. My guests are the film's producer, Hannah Lindgren, of Deliberate Media, and RJ Wall, the organizer of Chef's Night Out. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about a really fine new documentary film called Food First that is about the changing food scene and food sources in Indianapolis and central Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Hannah Lindgren, who is the producer. She's with Deliberate Media, producer of the film, I should say, and RJ Wall, who is the founder of Chef's Night Off. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
It's good to have you here. Well, I'm going to start with you, Hannah, and I should say, I really enjoyed your film.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for making it possible for me to see it before we had this conversation. But I'd like to talk with you a little bit about, you know, the genesis of it, how it got started, what prompted you to think that this was the kind of subject for the film you wanted to make.
Yeah, for sure. So it's has quite a backstory, and it's really a very personal one. When I went to college at Ball State in 2009, I started having issues with food. So food, I wasn't like digesting well. I was having all sorts of problems. I started having to go to the doctor a lot, and I wasn't getting the right nutrition. I just looked very sick, and I was losing a lot of weight. And so we figured out that I was intolerant to gluten and dairy. And cutting those out of my life sort of changed my relationship with food, because up to that point, I didn't really care. Like, I'm like most people, you don't really think about what you put in your mouth other than something that you enjoy, maybe. And my mom had always been, you know, she loves to cook, she loves to bake, and always wanted me to do that with her. And I just always refused. So it was really a huge shift in my life at that point when I suddenly had to think more about what I was eating. And I kind of carried that through college. But then after college was another big moment where I realized at that point, living by myself, that I was the only one responsible for my own food. I didn't have, you know, a parent cooking for me. I didn't have the dining halls at school. And at that point, I really took a step back and said, like, well, what am I feeding myself? I started exploring farmers markets and going to those and just learning to cook just basically from scratch. And from that point, I really got interested in figuring out how to tell that story that so many of us have, which is our relationship with food and how it shifts and changes. So from there, it was just research, and I got connected with Audrey Barron, who started Ezra's Enlightened Cafe, the first raw vegan cafe in Indianapolis, and everything just kind of fell into place after that.
What was there a moment or a point? I mean, obviously, this was a very intimate experience for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had health troubles and all of that sort of stuff, but we all have things like that in our lives, some challenge or issue. Mm-hmm. What was the point when you began to think, oh, there's a movie here?
Well, actually, my business partner at the time and I were considering doing a story about ourselves, so doing it really like filming ourselves figuring it all out, you know, growing a garden and figuring out how to cook and just all that sort of stuff. But it's really when I realized how universal it is and how food just impacts absolutely everyone, because we all have to eat every day, that I said, well, that's the best type of story, you know, the one that everyone can relate to.
And RJ, I want to talk to you because one of the things that comes through in this film, and I should say we've done several shows.
Yeah, I've heard them.
on this subject of really sort of the evolving relationship this community has with its food sources and the development of the local food movement and all of that. What do you think started that? Because for a long time, as Hannah says, food was something we were almost unconscious about. It's about the, you know, it was almost the equivalent of breathing in and breathing out. You didn't think about it a whole lot in this culture. And now there is a much greater consciousness, I think, across the board of what people are eating and where it comes from.
I slightly disagree with you. I think, you know, my grandparents...
You're allowed to disagree with me. <It's okay. laughs> That's the point of the show.
My grandparents growing up had massive gardens in their backyards.
Yeah.
They were conscious of their food, but it wasn't riddled with pesticides and things of that nature. And I think it was the 80s and 90s when people started, you know, with 50 and 60 hour work weeks that fast food took over. I think the reason now that you're seeing a switch in that tide is we raise some of the best produce, both protein and vegetable based, in the United States here in Indiana. I mean, our pork, I challenge you to find better pork outside of here. I challenge you to find better duck than outside of here. The beef we're raising is outstanding. And I think now we have the culinary talent. This is from my perspective, the culinary talent to support that, that produce. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot more people paying attention to what they eat and how they eat from the restaurant perspective. I think as far as the home perspective goes, do I want a tomato that's been on a truck for 10 days from Mexico, or do I want one that's been at the farmer's market and was pulled the day before? I mean, there's night and day difference between the two products.
When did that start to change, though? And that's, I guess, what I'm getting at. I understand your thesis, and I agree with it, actually, that a couple of generations ago, you know, we had a much more intimate relationship with the kind of food that we have. I'm a baby boomer, and that really was not the case, except in fairly rare exceptions, with people of my generation. And I remember even going, you know, part of it was the meals we had in school and all of that were very heavily processed. At what point, and was there an event or series of events that sort of began to crystallize, you know, the idea that maybe we've drifted a little too far away from the sources of what we eat?
I would bank on it being the multitude of health issues attached to a poor diet. I think people realized over the last 15, 20 years that these health issues that you have are directly attached to what you're putting into your body. So people wanted to put the best into their body, and I think that's what we're at now.
Yeah, and you can see that through, you know, the health networks in the area that are now so actively involved in things related to food. So like Eskenazi Hospital and Eskenazi Health as an organization, you know, going forward with the mindset of nutrition as preventative medicine and using that as a concept. I mean, that's just proof right there of what RJ said, that, you know, obviously we're all taking a closer look at what the food we're eating is doing to our bodies.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about really the food scene in Indiana. The springboard for our conversation, though, was a new documentary film called Food First about the changing food scene and food sources in Indianapolis and central Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, I should ask, Hannah, we've been talking about your movie. We ought to tell people when they can see it, if they choose to, and where.
Yes, absolutely. So we wanted this documentary to kind of be a springboard for conversation. We wanted people to do just what we're doing today, which is talk about it and think about it more. So we set up a 6 screening series for this summer over June and July. And those screenings are each unique events in their own right, but they're each also followed by a panel discussion with community conversation, participation with the audience and everything. We had 4 of those in June, and we have our last 2 this coming weekend. So we have one on Friday night, tomorrow night, at 6 p.m. at 37 Place, which is in the Martindale-Brightwood neighborhood. And that one's going to be really cool because it's going to be in the community center. And then after the presentation of the film and the panel, we're going to actually have a youth-run farmer's market. So it's going to be students from the Feligua Highwood Center and Paramount School of Excellence. And they've all grown all these vegetables themselves, and now they're selling the vegetables themselves. And then we'll also have students from KIPP, the school, to do a food demo. I think they're doing watermelon mint feta salad. and then on Sunday, we have another screening. This is our last one in our series, which is actually with Chef's Night Off, which is RJ's organization. And that one's going to be really cool because we're going to have some appetizers created by local chefs beforehand, and then screen the film and talk a little bit about restaurants.
Now, you've had several screenings before this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What has the reaction been when people see it?
Everyone's been really wonderful about it. We've had some really great conversation, and it's been very interesting because we've partnered with different organizations or businesses for each one of these screenings. And so each one, the discussion kind of takes a different tone to it. So, you know, we had one at Eskenazi Hospital, and that really talked a lot about nutrition as preventative medicine and access. And but we also had one with Indie Food Council, and that one, you know, had a different tone because these are, you know, all the people who are in the trenches every day creating, you know, small farms and producing local and selling local. And so that had a different tone in the conversation. But overall, you know, everyone's been, I think, really appreciative of the fact that it takes a positive approach. Mm-hmm. So I very purposely made the film. There are a lot of films out there about food that use scare tactics that mm-hmm. are trying to get you to eat better by saying you're going to die and look at all the way the animals are treated and all these different things. Well, those are already out there. We didn't need to tell that story. We wanted to tell the story of the amazing things that are happening here and show how progressive Indianapolis actually really is and is becoming. And so the fact that it portrays Indianapolis in such a great light, I think people really enjoy that.
Go ahead.
We have a fantastic food community here. I mean, the men and women and kids that I have met through Chef's Night Off and the Farmers Market and Slow Food Indie are outstanding people, and they work together, and they work together side by side. And it's such a grassroots growth. I think that has to be – somebody needs to make note of that. It's really a neat community.
Archie, what accounts for that? I mean, I agree with you. I agree with you. And that's one of the things, actually, I think the film brings out. I mean, among other things – I was intrigued to see just how many different voices were talking about these issues and how many of them Hannah had brought out. But, you know, we don't normally think of indulging in stereotypes here about my state, but we normally don't think of Indianapolis as cutting edge in a lot of things. We are somewhat, though, at the forefront of this movement. Why is that?
I think Indianapolis historically has always been 10 years behind the curve. That's why I started Chef's Night Off. I had lived in Chicago for several years, and I wanted to do something here. I honestly don't know. It's just, I think, teamwork. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I believe it's teamwork. I think we had a core group of go-getters and trigger pullers that, instead of sitting around and talking about it, they acted and they did it, and they fearlessly, you know, this documentary, I'm certain, was scary to just, we're going to do this. I think a lot of those individuals got together, worked together, and now we have this beautiful byproduct.
What was it like being on camera? Because you're in the movie.
It was at Bent Rail. Uh-huh. Awkward?
Awkward?
It was slightly awkward for me.
You were very hungry. That's the thing that I remember.
I was super hungry. My belly was growling the whole time. It was fun. I tried not to look at the camera. I feel like maybe I give more concise answers, not staring in the camera.
What's cool is that really, like you said, it's a network of people. Mm-hmm. And the way it goes, you know, like Growing Places Indie is mentioned in another place, like another interview, like mm-hmm. all these, that wasn't intentional. Like it literally just came out as I was doing the interviews that each of these places had somehow a web of connection to another place that I was interviewing. So it was very cool.
And how many, how many people did you have to talk to figure out that you were going to do this? Because it's, everyone thinks it's a movie and it's going to be easy. You just put a camera and let people talk. And
well, then, I mean, no, I, it's, no not. It's not. I did work on it for 2 years and 3 months. So it was quite a long journey. And there are 19 featured individuals, and that isn't even everyone that I interviewed. And it's obviously not all of the footage that I interviewed. Because the scene itself is changing so rapidly, it changed as I was producing it, and so the story became slightly different as we went on.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Food First, a new documentary film about the changing food scene in Indianapolis and central Indiana. My guests are Hannah Lindgren, she is the producer of the film, she's with Deliberate Media, and RJ Wall, founder of Chef's Night Off. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. I'm John Krall, you're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking today about Food First. It's a new documentary film that's going to be showing tomorrow and Sunday. We'll talk a little bit more about those showings here in a bit. It's about the changing food scene and our changing attitudes about food sources in Indianapolis and central Indiana. My guests are Hannah Lindgren, who is the producer of the film. She's with Deliberate Media, and RJ Wall, who is the founder of Chef's Night Off. Well, RJ, we've alluded to it, but we probably ought to talk a little bit about what Chef's Night Off is.
Yeah. Chef's Night Off is a series of dinners. They're collaborative. I take the best cooks, line cooks, sous chefs, and chefs from locally owned restaurants around the city, state, and now the region, and I put them together, and they do a four-course past appetizer meal. It's a collaborative effort. We get a lot of guys and gals working together who have never worked together before, and maybe we'll never work together again, but chefs in Indiana are very busy, and they don't have a lot of time to do stages. Mm-hmm. This gives people an opportunity to work with other people to get their creative juices flowing, to get some new experience so they can learn new techniques, new cooking methods, et cetera, et cetera.
And I'm going to expose my ignorance here. You used a term I did not understand, stages.
Stages where you, an internship for maybe a day, maybe a week, aspiring chefs and chefs go to high-end restaurants and hang out in the kitchen in hopes of learning from that chef.
And how often does Chef's Night Off occur? And is there a place where people can find out about it?
Chefsnightoff.us is my website. About monthly, we're in other cities now. We're doing them in St. Louis, Louisville, back in Chicago, working on Columbus right now. So, I'm wind up doing two dinners a month, but locally once a month.
Locally once a month. And is it something that the public can attend?
Anybody. There's this myth that it's not a public event, but it's very public. And the more new people that we can get to come and experience a dinner like this is always better. I love that I have a very consistent group of guests, but I love it when I get newcomers.
So they go to the website, they find out when the next one is. I'm assuming that there is a cost for this. What is it normally?
Anywhere between $55 to $75, depending on the meal and the chefs. If we have to bring in guys from out of town, there's added cost to that. So.
Okay. And Hannah, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the event on Sunday because mm-hmm. we kind of rushed through that in the first segment.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the timing and all of that?
Yeah, so like I said, we have the event on Friday night, but if that doesn't work for you, we have one on Sunday as well, and that one's going to be really cool. It'll be at 12:30 at the Indianapolis Art Center in Broad Ripple, and we're going to have just sort of a little a time where you can get appetizers made by local chefs, and then we'll screen the film at 1 in the theater there, and then have a conversation afterward with a panel of people who are knowledgeable on restaurants and the restaurant scene here, and talk a little bit about that. And RJ can talk a little bit more about what the chefs are going to be creating.
Is there a cost to attend?
It's $20.
$20, okay. And do you have to make reservations, or can you just show up?
They'll need to buy tickets beforehand so we can
figure out how much food to make.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the chefs that we have on this, we have Audrey Barron from Ezra's. If you've not been there, you have to go. Her treat game is so strong. So we're going to have some delicious treats from her. And then Alan Sternberg, the James Beard-nominated chef from Cerulean, will be preparing appetizers as well. Both of these two are outstanding chefs. Everyone's going to be happy with the food there, certainly for the price of $20. Mm-hmm. We have a beautiful panel of individuals speaking. We've got Craig Baker. We've got...
we have Audrey. Audrey and Alan are both of the chefs who are going to be contributing appetizers will also be on the panel. And then I'll be on the panel. Not that I'm a draw, but...
And I might get on it, too, if I feel.
But answering questions, presumably, about the film, too.
About the film, yes. But mostly, like, our intention with these conversations was to have people talk about the movement. I've said the entire time, like, Food First is not about me. Like, that's why we changed direction significantly, because the food community is such an amazing community of collaborators and contributors, and that includes, you know, the audience, and that's why we want the audience to be, you know, part of the discussion with Q&As and bringing up points. And I mean, half the time on these screenings so far in our conversations, people haven't had questions, they've had statements, or they've talked about their own experiences, and that's wonderful that people can come to these and give their own viewpoint, because we all have different ones.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Food First. It's a new documentary film about the changing food scene and food sources in Indianapolis and central Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Sue has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Sue, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on today.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to bring to listeners' attention that one of the reasons that Indiana is so far ahead than other states in the slow food way is because people like Sissy Bowman, who created the first organic organization for certification in Indiana, has been bringing the high-quality food, no-pesticide-type food to Indiana's attention at the Horticulture Congress that is held each year in Indianapolis. And then you have businesses such as the one that I co-own with Kay Grimm called Basic Roots Community Foods. And we just celebrated our 10th anniversary. And our business is a capitalistic model that showed the farmers the money, so that it only took us 3 years to become a 100% local all year round with our to-your-door farmers market service.
No, I was going to just ask, and normally I don't interview people who are calling in, but you've got a fascinating story. So what prompted you to start the business?
We wanted to eat better and could not afford it. And so we started with organics from Indianapolis fruit, and then had a comparison side by side of organic Costa Rican asparagus and farmer Marvin Miller's fresh off the field asparagus. And the epiphany hit that local food was the direction we had to go. And it took Kay 2 winters. Mm-hmm. Of calling local farmers, basically showing them the money, because mm-hmm. they knew how to do what their grandpa taught them on how to get the food to market. What they did not know was who was going to buy it from them, and if those people would pay the prices it took to make it worth the extra work to have food year-round. And we showed them the money. I listened to Kay call hundreds of farmers over 2 winters to say to them, hey, what you got for me? So because we bought from them during the summer, she took their contact information, and there you have it. We showed them the money. They told other farmers that, you know, the market was growing to support it. And we've been working with Basic Roots Community Foods in support of local farmers ever since.
Well, thanks very much for the call and for sharing your story and that information, Sue. Thanks again.
Thank you for having me on the program.
Certainly. Well, right. And what I'd like to talk about, if I could real quickly, to pick up on what Sue was saying. I mean, how much of this also was figuring out? Because in many ways, it's a no-brainer for us to think, okay, food's going to be better the closer it is to
and
all of that.
Yeah.
But how much of this also was, she kept coming back to that phrase, show me the money.
Yeah.
Developing a new business model or developing a business model that made sense to people who otherwise might be reluctant, Hannah.
Yeah, and I'm you know, not going to claim that I'm an expert on this because I'm not. But it's one of the biggest issues is that people would think that it should be easy to, you know, grow locally and sell locally. It should be easier than shipping it, you know, things halfway across the country and having other things shipped back to us, like almost the same exact produce or items, you know. But for some reason, it doesn't make sense in our society right now. Like, and I think it's particularly with a lot of the regulations on the state level and the local level don't allow for things like small farms and for, you know, selling small amounts of produce locally. I mean, farmers markets just don't really cut it for farmers. Like, they need other, you know, outlets and other ways to sell their stuff. And so I do think that it's a big issue. And it is a no-brainer in the fact that it is nutritious, more nutritious when it's closer. And it's, you know, it's just better to support your local economy. But the structure, you know, with the government and everything, it doesn't really lend itself to that.
And this leads into we probably don't have time to start digging this deep into it, but the food system in and of itself is fairly corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
To raise food and grow food properly and ethically costs more money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of these places are paying people slave wages or not at all. They're working in very unfair conditions. This is something Slow Food Indy tries to combat. So then they can in turn provide cheaper food, which in turn keeps its thumb on top of the small farmer. If you watch any of these documentaries about farms such as Tyson or any of these Monsanto farms, and they effectively own the farmers and the farms. I don't want to delve super deep into it, but that's the reason why it's more expensive for farmers to put out locally raised asparagus versus asparagus that comes from, you know, Southern California or Mexico.
One thing that I do think is great about Sue calling in is that, you know, when she said, you know, her organizations and everything, RJ and I both looked at each other and we both had never heard of it. And you'd think that's a bad thing. But what is great is that there are so many people doing so many great things in this state, like, and we can't even keep track of them all. And they're just popping up everywhere and things are happening on the grassroots level, just like RJ said. And I think that's absolutely terrific.
Well, and it does seem this is a movement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to use the term in a metaphoric sense, that an organically grown one, in
mm-hmm.
that it seems to have sprung up somewhat spontaneously, that there hasn't been it's not been very top-down. It's been a lot of people starting, as you say, at the grassroots level and then kind of finding each other. I mean, that was one of the subtexts to your film, even, mm-hmm. Hannah, is how many of these people were doing, if not the same thing, very similar things, but weren't even aware of each other's efforts. And then they found each other, and there was a sense that, you know, that the isolation was ending too. There was reassurance in that.
And there's two things happening that I think are really helping to combat that and to help bring everyone together and, you know, show all of the things that are happening. And that's here in the Indianapolis area. It's Indy Food Council. They're doing a lot to bring all the different conversations about everything related to food, whether that's, you know, the economic impact or, you know, growing practices or education or all, like, they're talking about all these different pillars. And Ted Green from LISC is part of that. And he's featured heavily in the film because they really do sort of have a through point with every organization, and they're really doing great things. And then there is a movement on, you know, the governmental level where it's their Indiana Grown program, where they're trying to promote more foods in here. Now, a lot of those are non-commodity things. They're things that have been processed together into something else. So whether that's granola or mustard or something like that. But the fact that you can now go into a lot of Marsh and Kroger stores and see that Indiana Grown kiosk is just a sign that things are moving and people are talking to each other and getting on the same page.
We are talking about food. The springboard for the conversation is a new documentary film called Food First. It's about the changing food scene here in Indianapolis and central Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can call us at 866-476-3881. Darren, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say that in grade school, fifth grade, I had somehow acquired acute lymphocytic leukemia. And at that time, my brother was studying nutrition, and he, through his advice, I somehow lived, got through all this stuff, and the drugs that Riley Hospital was giving me weren't working on me. So the last resort was to administer cobalt radiation, which, as any scientist really knows, it's it'll really mess you up. So I had all kinds of horrible side effects from it. First and foremost, I got violently ill. I lost all my hair for a couple of years. Gave me heart murmur, and it made me sterile. The last side effect I got that I didn't know about for about, I don't know, 30 years, was it gave me a brain tumor. Mm. This is pretty documented with my doctors around the world and the scientists, that was caused by the cobalt radiation. I've always been against nuclear power. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of ironic that I should survive my leukemia. And I'm totally against the splitting of the atom, because I think it's a horrible thing in nature to do something as bad as split the atom. Yet it saved my life. So,
well, I am sorry for the many challenges, Darren.
I'm sorry, what?
I am sorry about the many challenges. I want to thank you for sharing your story with us. And obviously, your brother's advice on nutrition probably had some role in saving your life. Thank you again for giving us a call and sharing your story.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Certainly. Well, that is the pretty extreme example, mm-hmm. but it's the, you know, variation, obviously, of what kind of prompted you to do the film, is that a lot of people were having health problems associated to not putting good fuel into their bodies.
Yep. It's like RJ said, you know, that's, I think, what a lot of that sort of just, it's popping up out of nowhere, is because everyone's just kind of realizing on an individual level and then talking to each other about, hey, food has helped me heal from whatever they're dealing with.
Is it hard to educate people about that? Because, you know, at some point, I think you almost need some sort of crystallizing event like yours, Hannah. Mine, in my case, was I was diagnosed as a diabetic when I reached a certain age and realized, okay, it's probably not a real good idea to be dumping a couple of tons of processed sugar over my taste buds and into my body every year. RJ.
No one's ever had a delicious salad and locally raised pork chop and be like, man, I feel like crud after eating this. It's not, that's a reality, but you can go to an all-you-can-eat buffet And then you walk out of there and you're shaken and you feel terrible because you just put terrible in your body.
But we've been so conditioned.
One step away from a coma, yeah.
To answer your question, is it hard to educate people? It is and it isn't.
I'll tell you what. We're approaching a break. Why don't we talk about how we educate them when we come back from that?
Sounds good.
All right. I really appreciate it. We are talking about the new documentary film, Food First, here on No Limits. My guests are the film's producer, Hannah Lindgren. She's with Deliberate Media. And R.J. Wall, the founder of Chef's Night Off. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about a new documentary film called Food First. It's about the changing food scene and food sources in Indianapolis and central Indiana. My guests are Hannah Lindgren, who is the producer of the film and is with Deliberate Media, and R.J. Wall, who is founder of Chef's Night Off. Before we went to the break, we were talking about how hard it is to educate people about the quality of the food that they are eating and what it might do to them. I had to cut you off because we were approaching the break, RJ, but I'd like for you to continue your thought, please.
We have a great multitude of organizations here that are trying to educate the public. My focus is diners. I strongly encourage people to support local restaurants and spend their money locally. 75% of every dollar spent at a locally owned business stays in the community versus the alternative. In turn, I think if you can get good food in their mouths, that's the best way to educate them. And that's been my focus for the last few years, is giving these farmers credit for what they're doing. I mean, I love Gunthorpe pork. His pork is so darn outstanding. And that's because somebody, Leighton Roberts, gave it to me once. I tried that side by side with some factory farmed frozen pork, and it was night and day difference. And that's how I choose to educate people. Hannah chose to make a documentary. Slow Food Indie does it a little more. They have a slightly different focus. A lot of the organizations do.
Honestly, as adults, it's so much harder. It's so much harder to educate adults and to get adults to think differently about their food, because we're all super stubborn, right? So, I mean, that's why a large portion of the film is dedicated to talking about what education is happening at the youth level. And that's, you know, a lot of what our conversation will be about tomorrow night when we're talking about all of the different, at that screening, we're going to talk about all the different schools and the education programs that are happening around the city. And the proof will be in these kids who've learned to grow these vegetables and learned to sell them. And they're learning all of these life skills that food can teach you. And not only that, but they now have this foundation of eat local, eat healthy, grow your own, and they're going to carry that on. And it's really the only way to ensure that in the future, you know, those generations have that mindset.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Mary, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Mary writes, "I feel the demise of the American diet is in direct relationship to the availability and use of the microwave." Huh. RJ.
I have not had a microwave in my home for 10 years. Not saying that I don't eat some processed stuff sometimes. I think that that in culmination with just people getting very busy and the fast food boom, I think that that's all linked and tied together.
And I do think that it's important to point out that, like, RJ and I don't have perfect diets, and we don't eat local all the time. And, you know, and that's, it's about just making small changes. So say you and your husband eat out once a week, like that's your special thing on Saturdays or something. Well, why not choose to try the multitude of local restaurants, you know, and say, well, we're going to make that choice. Well, that's one tiny choice that has a huge impact. So it's not about all or nothing. It's about figuring out ways to incorporate the things that are talked about in Food First in your life, how it works for you.
And I think that's one of the big things, is people feel off-put about, they feel like they have to go all in, and you don't. Eat locally two meals a week, three meals a week, change and slowly implement it. I go to Olive Garden once a month because I love delicious Olive Garden, and I feel awful after it. But
but you go. We've got a listener named Sheldon who wanted to know if our guests know what meat glue is.
Yes.
And if it's in use in the restaurant scene in Indy.
I have.
What is meat glue first?
I don't know specifically what it is, but it is a substance, a chemical that binds meat together. I know that some people have used it to make really fancy gastromolecular food when that was a thing. I've not heard that term in probably 3 or 4 years. I think it flashed in the pan and was gone. I haven't heard of a chef using it locally for quite a while, thankfully, because it's disgusting.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Food First, a new local documentary about our changing attitudes about food and how those attitudes are taking root here in Indianapolis and central Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Gwen has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Gwen, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
Certainly.
Enjoying it.
What's on your mind?
Well, I was just curious with tying in with today's program was the ugly food movement and what's happening with that. I see it in other places around the country. It's really taking off, and I know Kroger's is championing it in other locations around the country. And are you seeing any of that here in central Indiana?
Well, you got RJ laughing, so I'll throw the question to him first. Thanks very much for the call, Gwen.
You're welcome.
I've always been that guy that when I see the goofy looking tomatoes or squashes or whatever they are, I think imperfections make things beautiful. That being said, I don't know that it's catching on here or not catching on. I don't know. John Brooks makes some really ugly food. I love that guy. It's delicious, always delicious. But I haven't seen it being implemented on a commercial scale. But I see a lot of people posting on Instagram, like farmers market people and such, posting, I've got this delicious, crazy tomato. It's like 3-in-1. And then somebody takes it home and does something funny with it. It's fun for sure.
We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener who didn't want to be identified. It says, as I'm listening to the program today and hearing the reports about all of the great food that is available in our region, I'm also recalling a program that we did recently, which is true, in which we learned that Indianapolis is one of the greatest food deserts in the nation. It seems that there are considerable disparities to be overcome in order to better feed our population. Could we talk about that?
Absolutely. So the film, it's might have been hard to tell in the conversation that we've had so far, but it touches on a lot of different topics. Mm-hmm. So it touches on restaurants, it talks about nutrition and cooking and local and buying local and agriculture, but it also talks about food deserts. And it also kind of ties into the education with the youth, because that's where a lot of the education in the schools is now starting through these programs in underserved areas. It's a massive problem. And luckily we have organizations like Indy Food Council and a lot of the neighborhoods, the neighborhood organizations are working together to create change, but it's not, you know, one fix. It's not let's put a grocery store there and everything's fine. It's also teaching people to relearn habits and that's, you know, there's a project getting started up and running by actually one of my good friends. It's called Microgreens Project Indian. It's a project that's been around. The Microgreens Project itself has been around the country, but this one is now a chapter that's going to start in Indianapolis. And that's specifically teaching children in schools who are in these cooking clubs how to purchase healthy food and then prepare it, but on a food stamp budget. So it's aware of those restrictions, and it's aware of, okay, well, let's go to your closest grocery store or, you know, wherever you can get food, and let's figure out how you can make that work for you. And I think that's it. It's meeting people at the level that they're at. Obviously, we want to get rid of our food deserts entirely if we can, but I think there are a lot of programs that are trying to combat that at the ground level right now.
We are talking about food in general, healthy food, locally grown food. The springboard for the conversation is a new documentary film called Food First. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Kyle, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. So, I just want to say hello to RJ and hello to Hannah.
How's it going, Kyle?
Fantastic job. So I've had the opportunity to see the film quite a few times, and I think that's what we're missing out on is this great event that's coming up this weekend, and what a great film it is. So basically it has this opportunity to make such a huge impact, like it has on myself. I've only been in Indy about 2 years now, but it's amazing watching the film and seeing everything that's going on that's kind of right under our noses, especially someone as kind of blissfully ignorant as myself when it comes to food. So it's just, I guess it's my endearing support of the film that I wanted to express, but it's inspired me to make a lot of changes in my life based on what I eat and where I get it from. So I just want to give, you know, big props to Hannah and shout out to RJ for being wonderful in the film and putting on Chef's Night Off.
Right on, Kyle. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Kyle.
Yeah, thanks, y'all. Rock and roll.
Rock and roll.
Okay. So, and we've alluded to the fact that this film is about a lot more than nutrition, although the focus has been there and some of the calls have been there because clearly that hits people close to where they live. One of the things I've always found fascinating is that there's a profound spiritual component to this movement, too. It's about getting closer to the idea of existence itself.
Yeah. And spiritual in any way. So it doesn't matter, you know, what you believe. Like, for example, I'm an atheist, but I'm fully like, I feel so much more connected to just the universe itself by eating locally and by eating things that I have grown. Because look at this thing that you've created out of nothing, you know? And a lot of that also impacts a brief section of the film. We talk about how, you know, eating better and eating local has an impact just on the population's psyche. You know, like we all, if we can eat better, we'll feel better, we'll act better, you know, and, you know, look at the news over the last 2-3 weeks. I mean, we can all use, you know, more happiness, and we can all use being more mindful and having that connection to the earth and to each other. I think you really get that out of food.
If you are just joining us, we're talking about Food First, a new documentary that's going to be aired a couple of times, not aired, but shown a couple of times this weekend, Friday and Sunday specifically, and we will talk about the details of that. Again, Sandy, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I had heard Hannah. I've been listening for a while. It's very interesting. And I had heard her say she was gluten-free. And I have a daughter who is gluten-free and that is pregnant. And I was wondering if she could recommend any books or any particular places, any nutritionist, anything that has to do with healthy eating like she's discussing and being gluten-free.
Yes, sir.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Sandy.
Yeah. Everyone, when they get diagnosed with gluten intolerance, goes on a different journey. And usually it follows the same path where when you first find out, then you go to the grocery store, to the gluten-free aisle, and you're like, oh my gosh, look, I can get gluten-free Oreos and I can get gluten-free, you know, all these other things. And really, I would just encourage you to push past that phase and really just own it. Like, I had to very intentionally choose to not be bitter about the fact that, because bread's delicious, you know what I mean? Like, I wish that, and especially Miss Cheese, because I can't have dairy either.
Yeah.
But you just have to own it or else, you know, you'll let it become a bad part of your life. So that's how I've learned to love food and love cooking and love having my hand in that, because I've created now delicious things on my own. And I use Pinterest as a huge resource for recipes. I mean, there are just tons of recipes online and tons of great cookbooks. There are also many restaurants in Indianapolis now where you can go eat out gluten-free when you don't feel like it. And a lot of them are local. I especially love the whole Patitude chain just because there are so many of them. I can hit them pretty much anywhere I go in the city, and they're very good about it. But I encourage you to just think about what's naturally gluten-free. So go back to eating more vegetables, to eating, you know, other types of grains, because we're just so stuck on wheat for bread, but we don't need, you know, that. We can make bread with other things. And so just own it and research it, and there are lots of places around that you can get some.
Did you find out of that experience, and I want RJ's thoughts on this too, but one of the revelations for me when I was diagnosed as a diabetic and had to change my lifestyle and eating habits and all of that is I realized, as I say, once I stopped pouring that much sugar over my taste buds, a lot of other things began to taste. My palate got much more subtle and much more sensitive. Mm-hmm. And I actually came to enjoy the experience of eating a lot more.
Absolutely. I was that guy that heavily salted everything and put sugar on everything. And I reference Japanese desserts oftentimes. Japanese desserts are very subtle and muted in flavors. Mm-hmm. And when I was younger, I didn't quite enjoy them. And now, you know, you try mochi and real mochi, not the it's so beautiful and complex and flavorful. And as I started to be more conscious about pouring sugar and salt on everything, I started to enjoy food much more as well. I definitely echo your sentiments.
I always tell people that, funnily enough, my palate and my interest in food expanded way more after I had restrictions on my food. And that's because before, like I said, I didn't appreciate food. My top two favorite foods were grilled cheese sandwiches and Kraft macaroni and cheese, or Stouffer's macaroni
still
and
delicious.
Cheese. They're still delicious. But, you know, I can't eat those anymore. And I always look at it as, you know, a blessing in disguise that because I couldn't eat those foods every day and eat ramen and eat, you know, pizza rolls, and that was pretty much all I was eating, that now, you know, I can.
Yeah, you mentioned some of my previous food
exactly.
groups too,
but, yeah, but that was what I was eating all the time. And now it's okay to eat, you know, that every once in a while, but I've just really learned to appreciate the subtleties of things that I make myself or that, you know, the wonderful artist chefs that are in the city make for us too.
We're getting close on time, so we ought to talk a little bit. The two screenings that remain, the one tomorrow and the one Sunday, could you run us through them again?
Sure thing. These are the last two in our series of six. So we're going to have a screening tomorrow night at 37 Place, which is in the Martindale-Brightwood neighborhood. It's a community center, and that'll be at 6 p.m. We'll have the film screening followed by the short panel discussion, and then we'll have a youth-run farmers market with youth who've grown their vegetables and are selling them, and then a food demo. And that's just a suggested $2 donation. And then on Sunday, if you want a different sort of vibe, and that conversation tomorrow will be more about education. And then on Sunday, we're partnering with Chef's Night Off with RJ to have chefs Audrey and Alan create appetizers and show the film and then have a discussion about the restaurant and local sourcing scene. So that'll be at 12:30 at the Indianapolis Art Center on Sunday, and that's $20. And that one, we'd really love for you to purchase them in advance so that we have an idea on food.
And you can purchase tickets at chefsnightoff.us.
Chefsnightoff.us. And you mentioned earlier we ought to have people leave this program feeling hungry. With an appetite, what is going to be served at the
Audrey Barron from Ezra's? I said this previously, makes delicious treats, and when I buy treats, I mean chocolate goodness, balls of awesomeness. And Alan Sternberg makes some of the most beautiful, amazing, complex food around. I'm not certain as to what he's doing yet, but I'm 100% positive that it's going to be outstanding. Is that he never lets anyone down.
Well, and I think that will have to be the last word. But I'd like to thank both of my guests. Hannah Lindgren, who is the producer of the new film Food First. She is with Deliberate Media. And RJ Wall, who is the founder of Chef's Night Off, for what has been a really intriguing conversation.
Thanks,
and
thank
I also
so
want to say I really did enjoy the film. So, and I hope everyone else will see it and enjoy it as well. And I'd also like to thank all of our listeners. I had some great questions and comments. I always am grateful to you for sharing your stories. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cherzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.